Hello, and welcome to another Out of Spec Studio podcast. Today, I will be your host. I'm Austin Schieffer. I have Ben Spreen and Mike Breeling with me today.
I'm back.
Hello.
It's been a couple weeks.
Mike is back.
That's right.
All right. Well, to get us going, we are a, I guess, kind of EV-centric news source in a lot of ways. So we can start off with some of the hotter topics in the EV space. I guess we can get going with one that we're all excited to talk about. EPA range ratings came out for the Kia EV6 and the Ioniq 5. It looks like they both can get over 300 miles on the bigger battery. What are your guys' thoughts and comments on that?
I'm pleased to see this stuff. I feel like that 300-mile barrier, whether it be EPA or real-world range, at least for EPA, has been kind of, I think a lot of brands have been like poking at it, but not enough, especially mainstream cars in that, you know, lower. We don't know what it costs yet, but in that price, predicted price category, you know, a little bit below Model Y-ish, you know, in that, call it 38 to 50,000 range or something. It's good to see that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, usually when you see like range estimates come out, it's always, you know, the European cycle range, it's like 330 miles. And then the EPA range comes out and it's like 270. So I think it's really good to see the EPA range over 300, especially when you compare that to like the Polestar 2, which is probably going to be very similar in price to an EV6, at least the launch edition. Gets 265 with just the front wheel drive version, and its all wheel drive version gets, I think it's like 245. So I think it's a really good barrier to break, especially into that more mainstream. Now, I think they did say it's, you know, for the rear wheel drive long range version of both cars. And the EV6 nudges out the Ioniq 5 just a little bit, I'm assuming, because the Ioniq 5 is way more boxy. Compared to the EV6. And I know Kyle has actually reviewed an EV6 over in Europe, and it was pretty sleek, though I was surprised how big it was. But I think the EV or the Ioniq 5 is actually pretty big as well. I know Kyle is supposed to be getting, or it has one today. If you follow his Twitter, he's posted a picture of it. So hopefully he'll be on here next week and can talk about the differences. And I know amongst us, there's even some disagreements of those on this podcast currently about the design wise, which one you prefer. I am an EV6 fan for sure. And I know Ben is an Ioniq 5.
I like my box.
So, I'm definitely on the Ioniq 5 train.
I'll take the square. Thank you. Please and thank you.
I don't mind being different. It's
fine. I like the chubby looking Lancia Delta Integrale with an electric motor, please, for 500.
I really think that's what it is for me. As I see that, I'm like, that's an Integrale.
I can see that.
It does. It's that like C pillar.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do really like the styling of the EV6. It reminds me a little bit. I was just recently taking some pictures of one of my buddy's Stingers. And you can definitely tell it's kind of the same design language. And the Stinger, I think, is a great looking sedan. I don't know. Kia's been kind of killing it in the design department, especially on the bigger vehicles. I think they've been doing really, really well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we Ben and I had their new Kia Sorento hybrid. We loved the design of
it. I like that car.
That car
was one of my favorite hybrids.
Really good car. Yeah. I wish you could have just got it with the SX trim level to get all the nice stuff in it. Because they kind of like felt like they neutered it by only allowing you to get the EX trim.
Let me sidebar on that, because I actually really like that product. It's the best hybrid for people who want a hybrid, but they don't hate themselves realistically. Because if you get, say, any other hybrid, you have the eCVT thing, which means you accelerate and use your as the thing like revs out to 5 grand to slowly and begrudgingly get up to highway speeds. This thing, 6-speed automatic with a beefy electric motor in it. So it would do electric mode at like up to pretty good speeds because it was going through that gearbox and it would shift normally and it would feel very normal. And maybe an eCVT has some slight efficiency and or like response benefits, you know, because you're not having that big downshift, so to speak. but it didn't matter because it made it feel much more like an electric car, especially at that lighter level of driving. I think that's how hybrids should be. And I think if hybrids were that way sooner, people would be buying them far more frequently than they do, because everyone's used to the buzzy little Prius kind of experience, which is less ideal. Yeah,
that's exactly what we felt. And I think I even wrote that in the article that I wrote about that car. But design-wise, actually, Kia, as like we just said, has really been on a roll. I actually think the worst looking Kia currently is the Telluride, to be honest. Even out of like their cars, I prefer like the K5 looks great. Even the new little Forte looks good because they have light bars. Like everything has light bars in Kia world now, which I love because it's everything should have a light bar. I wish Minis could have a light bar, but I know that design-wise that wouldn't work. But that's why I like the EV6. I love the taillight design and just the front end. I don't know. It's how I prefer it over the pixelated light looking things on the Ioniq 5, personally.
I love the pixelated lights. That's more boxes on my box. Makes me
that's
very
why
happy.
You like the, what was it?
And if you have very low artistic talent like me, it's an easy car to draw. So that's already a bonus right there. But EV6, I think I'll have to see it in person to make up my mind fully, because I don't like any of its styling cues at all so far in pictures. But it's like also in pictures, it looks way smaller than it is. So maybe on everyone who's in front of it goes, wow, it looks amazing. So maybe that'll happen. But it's good. They make two versions, one for me, one for you. You know, those with style, those without it, you know, they've got a version for each.
Yeah. You can sell your Taycan and I'll sell the Mini and move on to that.
Okay, see, that's actually not a bad angle. All right, hang on. That's not the worst answer. I mean, it is matte gray, so that's like kind of cheating. Yeah,
that's matte. It's probably the highest option one you can get. It's like matte gray, and it's like got mountains behind it, and the light hitting it just right. So it's making a good case for itself here.
Why does it have ears?
I was trying to figure out what those were in the back.
That's interesting.
You know, it has to do with aerodynamics. Come on.
Yeah.
But does it really?
Downforce?
Yeah.
This car's been made for 100 years without those.
To make it more slippery. I mean, I'm not. I can't
unsee those now.
You know, fluid dynamics, but I'm assuming that's what it's for, hopefully.
Yeah, but the Toyota Supra had lots of vents on it for none of those reasons, so who knows? It does look kind of interesting.
Why they'd put a camera there, but it could be a camera.
Oh yeah, that could be a good camera position.
Nah, it doesn't look big enough to have a camera housed in it. I have no idea. I kind of like it though.
I like it too. I just want to know the purpose if they're doing it.
The purpose, because they can.
Things need a purpose. It's my logic. Unless they're just cool.
I am excited, and I believe the base model goes 232, I want to say. So even with not getting the long-range rear-wheel drive, you're still having a very, very usable.
Very good.
Very usable.
Did they say what battery size that was or not really?
I believe that is a entry-level 58 kilowatt hour.
That's actually pretty strong.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think the long-range should be
77.4, yep. And then the all-wheel drive, I think, gets you just under 300.
Very efficient.
I think 274 is the all-wheel drive.
I think more car companies should consider the long-range battery rear-wheel drive option.
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Always, in my opinion, okay, there's always the super fast one, and no one will argue that the super fast version of whatever isn't fun. But I feel like the biggest range possible in the rear-wheel drive configuration makes such a good all-round car. And I know some people have to drive both ways uphill in the snow and ice, that maybe not for you. But for like the rest of, at least in the U.S., like 95% of the U.S. does not have to battle snow uphill every day. And so like ID4, stuff like that, we can get the bigger battery and kind of just a rear drive. Heck, even the Model 3 long-range rear-wheel drive. Best Model 3 variant they
made. I agree. Yeah. I wholeheartedly agree. I'm back from whenever they made the like the 90s and the 75s, where you didn't have to do the dual motor. Those were a blast to drive. Those are so much
they were
fun.
Great. Yeah.
Model
S 75 no D rear wheel drive. That was a fun car.
I think that was my favorite Model S I ever drove.
It was basically discounted P85 is what it was. Because it's the same motor.
Yeah, it was so much fun. So much fun. I digress. I think that those offerings are going to be very strong. Pricing should be announced soon, is what everybody is saying. So hopefully we get to see those numbers and get to compare them to some of the competition. Like you said, maybe those Model Ys, Polestar, maybe even ID4. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I'm excited. I think these are going to be very interesting offerings in the EV segment, and Hyundai and Kia have just been on their game lately. So,
oh yeah. Very now they just have to start selling them in all of the states. Looking at you there,
Hyundai. Yeah.
Excuse me, Hyundai. Look at me. Listen to the words I'm saying. Offer it in every state this time. Same with you, Kia. I know what you did with the Kia Soul, because the new one's beautiful and awesome, and we can't have it. And it's upsetting because people would buy it. At least, like, North Carolina is probably not the most EV, like, obsessed state. But at least where we live, it's like a huge tech, pharmaceutical, research, university hub. EVs are everywhere here.
Oh, yeah.
And there's tons of alternative EVs.
Kia Souls and Leafs.
Yeah. There are so many e-Golfs and, like, Kia Soul EV first gens here that are, like, people had to get them from out of state to have one. It's like that's a commitment someone's had to make to have one. And there's a ton of them. So I feel like the demand is in areas like this. But they're going to just sell it in ZEV states, call it a day, unfortunately, for a little while. So,
well, to segue, speaking of things that we don't get here, Polestar just came out with a software update that took a page out of Tesla's book and made the car a little bit faster. I think it added 67 horsepower.
50 kilowatts, I think, in electrical terms.
Yeah, so I think it lowered like the mid-range time by 2.2 seconds, which is pretty significant. I mean, an additional 67 horsepower, you're going to notice that. I think they charged 1,000 euros for it, to unlock more power over in Europe. And apparently 400 people have already gotten the update for their car. So that's pretty good. I never thought the Polestar 2 needed more power, but more power is always welcome. It kind of differentiates it more from the Volvo XC40 because it had the
It's like 43 to 80 miles an hour are the biggest differences or something like that, or 100 miles an hour or whatever.
So that's like very typical Polestar fashion. So even when I owned my V90, when I looked at the Polestar tune, it was mainly like all mid-range punch where you felt the difference. It's not so much 0 to 60. But the mid-range is still pretty excellent considering passing power, or if you're out on a back road having some fun, I mean, you're not going to be 0 to 60.
It's very usable performance, where 0 to 60 is sort of a, like kind of notice it, but it's less realistically useful, whereas like I need to merge or pass, that's more useful.
Yeah. So that's cool. I mean, it's pretty exciting to see Polestar actually doing something with their software other than just no minor updates. It's cool that you can go in there and pull, like you said, Austin, pull a page out of Tesla's book and be like, oh, if you give us a little bit more money, we'll make your car faster. And I guess Volvo has done that in the past on their traditional ICE powertrains too, with the Polestar upgrades you could get. So hopefully it does come to America. I'm sure that there are plenty of Polestar 2 owners over here who would love to see that update come in. And in reality, $1,000 is a pretty easy sum of money for people to pass with to gain an extra 67 horsepower, probably just for bragging rights. They're probably going to ask if it comes with a little badge they can put on the back of the car or in the grill, which I'd want the badge. That's what I'm paying.
Absolutely.
I want the badge.
Well, kind of on a somewhat related note, not EV related, Stellantis recently was making a comment on how they plan to do OTA updates for their fleet, and how they already have done quite a few, but they have talked about how that's going to be a really big part of their revenue in the future. So I just thought that was interesting. And they mentioned Tesla specifically, obviously, in that article, of how they've kind of been the first automaker to really market themselves more as a tech company. But yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was really interesting that in the same batch of news, Polestar was doing just that. So yeah, I don't know. Very, very interesting stuff on the EV front.
There's a lot of good potential for revenue streams and good customer experiences.
Absolutely.
There's also just as much, if not more, potential for big revenue streams and customers hating everything about it. Yeah, so we'll see which companies do this right and which companies do this wrong, because it could be a bit of a learning from a few of these companies here.
Ben, yeah. I would love to pick your brain on that specifically, because in my time at Tesla, I had a lot of people have a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth when they found out that Tesla wasn't selling or wasn't giving you everything that the vehicle could do when they bought it. And I remember having conversations with customers, having conversations with my manager at the time, and he said it to me in a way that I think is pretty hard to argue with, of when you buy a vehicle, you agree to get the car that you're getting for the money that you're paying. That's what a purchase is. So for them to come and say, hey, we can give you heated seats in the rear, you just have to pay $2,000. I don't think that's necessarily unfair, because it's, I don't know. It's like if another company did that, I'd rather have the option to get it than the option to not. And I'd rather pay less for it if I don't plan on using it. But I know other people will have mixed feelings about that, and I'd be interesting to hear your take on it.
That's a good point. I think of it two different ways. I am a fan of being able to offer additional content in a vehicle or options or price points by doing something like that, if it truly works that way. So in the case of Model S 60 and Model S 75, when they were the same battery pack, like 2016, 2017 time period, that was an interesting one, because a lot of people, when they learned that the 60 was a 75, seemed to be angry for some reason, because they're like, oh, I'm not getting the whole battery. I imagine if you couldn't use your whole fuel tank, something like that. But the reality of it was, at that time, it was far cheaper for Tesla to have one battery pack than two. And because they had that one battery pack and that lack of complexity, to offer 60 and 75, it made the 60 cheaper, which seems counterproductive. But when you look at the whole global scale of producing a car, it was the case for them. And it meant someone who had a 60 could upgrade and get more range if they wanted to down the road. And a little power, yeah. I think that makes a ton of sense.
They were getting a flagship and they would give you the at the cheapest possible price. And that was the thing for me with the 60, is it was like 55 or 60.
God, I cannot remember, but I remember Model S 60 rear drive seeming like a really good deal when they did the facelift in 16 and a half.
Yeah,
that seemed like a really good deal at the time.
I got in early 17 when I started working there, so I came in on the very tail end of that whole debacle. And
was it like $10,000 or $12,000 to get the 75 on top of it or something?
It was
like 60 something, I think. Yeah, it was actually really cheap, shockingly.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe it was 70, but
I don't know. I just had a lot of conversations with people where I would try my whole tenure at Tesla, my whole like goal was to get people to think differently, because they'd always come in and have what they read on the news, and that was how they thought. And I always tried to just shift that. And maybe I wasn't going to sell them a car, but I always wanted to at least shift their mindset about how they thought about electric, how they thought about transportation, how they thought about green energy.
The other benefit of that whole 60-75 thing was when we had a bunch of hurricanes, everyone got free 75s for a while, which is kind of nice.
And then the funny thing is, especially being down in Texas where all that took place, a lot of people came in with like, instead of, wow, that's so cool that Tesla did that, they're like, wow, Tesla was holding out on all those owners. And I was like, no, that's not at all. I told people, like, if I talked to a car person about that, I was like, hey, you know that motor that you have in like whatever car you have? Did you know that in a lot of cases, those horsepower bumps you see year over year, they're not putting new equipment in those cars. They might just be adding a tune. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It's just this technology.
So that's the good side of it. I think the bad side of it is BMW charging a yearly subscription for Apple CarPlay, which is something that they are not having to support with cost on there. And I'll just pay for the feature. That's fine. But like that was kind of, and they roll it back because people complained. I think the heated seats thing is probably like a Model S 60, 75 scenario. To just put heated seats in all the Model 3s is probably cheaper, because that's not expensive hardware. But it reduces all the complexity of production and parts and different SKUs that you need to have on hand.
Yep.
It'll be, I think, actually, Tesla's done a very good job with their subscriptions. Like their premium data connectivity is pretty reasonably priced, $10 a month, $120 a year. That works out quite well for the amount of data you're allowed to do through it. It still doesn't allow you to do software updates, which is why. Just if I watch 4 hours of Netflix, but I can't download this 30, you know, like 300 megabyte software update, I have to connect the Wi-Fi. Just do that. Throw that in, you know, please. But they've done a good job with it. And I'm trying to think of any companies that haven't really, other than BMW, they definitely screwed that up.
I think it's so funny to me that BMW offered like CarPlay and it's like not a BMW proprietary anything. And they're like, yeah, you got to pay monthly for that. I know you can get that in a Camry, but you got to pay for that.
You can get that in like everything now.
Yeah. You can, so, everything comes standard with it. Maybe even wireless CarPlay, and BMW's like, nope. Mm-hmm. You got to pay for that. And we might even give you a light up grill too. So
I think the case is like, does it add value? Or here's the thing, like, what is it? Mercedes-Benz with the rear steering on the EQS or the S-Class, where you get 5 degrees without it. And if you pay the money, you get like 10 degrees.
They're I don't think that's happening anymore.
Okay. Well, it was supposed to happen and they're all made with the same part on that one. You know, like, sure, you're offering two options and you made it so you can charge what you want, but it's hard to make a like good faith argument on that because every single one's produced with the same hardware, regardless. There's not an option to not have it or something like that. So that one I don't see as easily. But I think like car subscriptions, network connectivity, future map updates, whatever it may be, we'll see a lot more of these car subscription stuff happening. So people may have to budget more than their monthly payment when they buy a car in the future. That could be a thing.
Yeah, you might save money on gas, but spend a little bit more on your subscriptions for whatever your car has. Everything has subscriptions, it
seems. God help you buy a gas guzzler and have to buy car subscription.
Right? It's a poor argument to go to EV.
Well, even some manufacturers offer like certain features that you get for 3 years or 36,000 miles or something like that. And then after that, you have to pay for it if you want to keep those features. Like I know Volvo, for instance, has their on-call, which is good for the 3 years, 36,000 miles. Unless I think if you buy a CPO one, it goes a little longer. But after that, if you want access to like the remote start or know their concierge, you have to pay a certain amount of money a year. I think it's like $150 or something a year to use it. So we're already starting to see some of that as far as the subscription goes. I wouldn't be surprised to see more of it, especially on EVs where you can do over the air software updates much easier than on a gas motor or an ICE car.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting time. I wonder what Stellantis has in mind for all that billions of dollars of revenue they foresee. Is it going to be multimedia stuff or?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they haven't been as big on the EV push. So I feel like a lot of it would be.
Well, their CEO says making EVs is hard. So
yeah, he's not ready for there's it. That.
I wouldn't say it was easy either, but yeah.
I think probably like just entertainment and multimedia upgrades would be my guess. But who knows? I mean, it could be like your fancy ECUs you get for your tuners and you just have your tuner send an over the air update to make your car faster. Maybe they'll do that too.
Here's a question. What is a EV or not EV, sorry, a car connectivity type subscription function you would have an interest in adding that you wish existed but doesn't exist yet? Because I've got an idea. I want to just have all parking and tolls and everything just paid through my car's account with the credit card on file. And I don't want to have to sign up for Easy Pass, park and go, any of that. I just want to be able to park the car, drive the car anywhere and not have to worry about bill by mail, parking meters, any of that. I just want it just like to tell all those systems, if this car is nearby, bill this, done. That I'd pay for. Especially if you lived in it like New York, DC metro area where that's really common.
Yeah, I
mean, that's a good idea. I like that. Audi kind of has like that built-in like toll pass thing where you
can just
upload your information. So that's kind of similar. So that obviously that technology exists. So let's make it happen.
Yeah, that could be a good one. There's a lot of actually, I would love to, if anyone has an idea that they think should be one of these types of functions, tweet it at us. I'm curious to see if anyone's got some good ideas. I bet there's a ton out there. We'll give them or good post ideas in the Discord. Instead of bad ideas. Yeah, or post in the Discord. This way we can publish these ideas for companies so that they have good ideas and not bad ideas, like making you pay monthly for the Apple CarPlay that's already in the car.
Or heated seats monthly.
You know what could be really interesting is with a stereo system in your car, maybe manufacturers partnering with musicians or audio files to tune the stereo in your car over the air for that specific type of music. Like maybe, I don't know, like Nissan partners with, I don't know,
Jay-Z.
Jay-Z, and all of a sudden Jay-Z's songs sound that much better in your Nissan with the new over-the-air Nissan multimedia update. Partner and collab with Jay-Z. I don't know. I think not that would be
actually
interesting.
That's not bad, actually. It's a good one.
I'm not on that.
Novelty navigation voice directions. Like if I want more to give me my turn-by-turn directions, I'll pay like $10 for that. Sure, why not? That'd be fun.
There's a lot that I'm not an audiophile by any means, but Jordan, my brother, is much more than I. And every time I see him, I just have him like tune my audio in my car to sound good for the music that I like. But I think there's definitely something there, because like it's like presets. If you've ever edited pictures on Lightroom, everybody's always got their presets they want to sell you that make your pictures look like.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like that, but for
that's a good idea. System.
Yeah. I don't know.
Especially when you have high-end audio and you have a lot of stuff to tweak, but a lot of stuff, really tweak it in that fine of a detail that you could from a OEM standpoint.
Not as much as like an Altima, more so in like a, I don't know, like a Jaguar or one of the ones you know, like a Bowers and Wilkins or like a very high audio or
Volvo, or Burmeister.
Where the owner very likely doesn't know how to tune to the extent that their audio system will allow them to. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. That's just one of my many thoughts. Or maybe if you have a Ford, you can have it tuned to like Jason Aldean or something.
Depends on the F-150.
Yeah. Great segue, Mike. So F-150 electric, so you may not like Jason Aldean if you're interested in this. They just closed the pre-orders on one. So if you wanted to pre-order one, too bad. Those are closed as of today, I believe, as of December 8th. And the order bank is going to begin in January and production to start, in their words, early spring of 2022. So what are you guys' thoughts? I feel like we haven't talked about the F-150 Lightning on the podcast too much. We mainly talk about like Rivian. So what are you guys' general thoughts?
I feel like
they
haven't given us enough info on like the bait. I want to know like a bit about pricing, and like I kind of want to know the top and bottom of it, what it looks like, because I think it'd be a whole lot more interesting if I knew how many miles I could go for how little money, which I think is going to be the deal with this thing.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I know when it first came out, the whole thing was like it starts as cheap as $40,000. So I mean, here's a fun little picture of the. I need to add that.
I think I like the base work truck spec the most.
Right.
Yeah, I think that is the work truck spec, because you don't get the full light bar, which I actually kind of like the way that truck looks.
Yeah,
I like it without the light bar a lot.
Yeah. It's got like a sport package on it too, I think. So it looks good. And I think if they can stick to that price point, which they probably can, because you know they're a much larger manufacturer.
I think they may know a thing or two about producing trucks.
Yeah, that's
they're a little familiar at that area.
They're going to sell a ton of them, just like the Maverick. You know, the Maverick is selling a lot because of its price point, and I think that alone is going to bring a lot of people to the EV.
Absolutely. Market. And here's a little on F-150. Yeah, on the screen you can see the kind of progression of the reservations, and I think that's a little interesting. Just reminds me back in my days at Tesla, we were always talking about the how many reservations we got and how quickly. This is really interesting. After like what, just over 2 months, I had over 100,000 reservations. Even talks of so many reservations that they're not, that some reservation holders will not be promised 2022 model year trucks. which is quite interesting. But here we go. I guess here's a quick little, I don't think we have all of the trim level specifics, but this is what they've announced so far. So they have the Pro, the XLT, the Lariat, and the Platinum.
I really like how they call the entry level model the Pro, rather right? than that's like how
every
X
company step does everything.
I'm surprised it's not the Sport, because the Sport is usually the go to for for the.
Well, like, I think they mean the Pro thing is going to be like fleet and professional usage, and so
okay, I can see that
might be the one actual good use of the word
that
Pro.
Because
it's going to be for actual, like the guy who comes and fixes your roof is going to have this. The contractors, the plumbers.
I think. Oh, they do say right up there, it's envisioned for professionals.
Yeah, it's not like Pro in the Apple sense where, oh, it's the expensive one, it's, but we still don't give you an SD card slot.
I want to know, are they going to have like a King Ranch? Because I think that would be incredibly ironic if they included a King Ranch in the Lightning. I don't know. I almost see that as a contract.
Like, EVs are perfect for a ranch. How big could a ranch be? It's not going to be more than 300 miles across, right? That's very true. And
we were actually talking about this with one of my buddies who is really into like adventuring, and he has family that has land out in West Texas. And he's like, you know, now that I think about it, an electric truck would be great for a ranch because you wouldn't have to get your gasoline trucked out to the ranch. You could just plug it in and charge it at the barn. So you're welcome, Ford, for that. You gotta at least make an ad campaign about
that's
that.
That's smart. I never even thought about this with a farm, because almost all your work is on this huge plot of land.
Yeah.
And to fuel everything up, you gotta leave. Oh, why are we not getting on EV tractors, guys? Come on.
You gotta leave, or you gotta have fuel taken to your actual ranch, which I feel like a lot of them probably do that, because the closest gas station probably burn.
Oh yeah, and if you're in rural areas,
even getting there. So
I could never do that without an electric car. I could not live on a farm without EVs. It would drive me nuts. If the gas station's not directly on the way of somewhere I'm going in a gas car, it's not happening. It's just going to have to wait until the car runs out of fuel or something. I'll push before I go out of my way for gasoline, because I hate doing it.
So the pricing, like you said, Ben, hasn't been announced just yet, but the
range, right?
The range hasn't either, but the speculations around price, or at least I guess the pre-announcements, have like been $40,000 to $90,000, or even 90 plus, which
covering all the bases.
Yeah, which is fairly standard for a lot of Ford's trucks, because you can get like that super base level, just XL or Pro or whatever they call it for the worker, and then you have your Platinums that are ridiculously priced. Nicer than a Lincoln, like top the line.
I am so fairly positive, like a Limited, which is above the Platinum trim F-150, is like $90,000 or $91,000 for the.
I know you can get an F-250 above $100,000.
Yep, new. For sure. Or a 350 or 450.
Yeah.
Limited.
I don't know if you can get the F-150 priced over six figures new, but I know the F2s and the three series, what is it, BMW, the F-350s will go up beyond that.
Lightning.
And I'm curious for y'all, because this is probably going to be a slightly different segment than we're used to seeing with the truck buyer population. What type of trim levels do you think will be hot? Do you think it'll be a lot of people just wanting an electric truck, so they'll get more of the base level, or do you think it will be people looking for those premium features, so they'll be going for more of the Platinum trim levels?
I think consumers are obviously going to go for what they go for now, which is like the expensive stuff, because trucks are luxury vehicles to many buyers. But I think what I hope to see is the base work truck ones everywhere, because a business owner is going to see through all the muck of EVs, range, blah, 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 all that like kind of, you know, FUD that's not necessarily the reality of ownership of an EV, and go, this thing's going to cost me nothing to run, and it's approximately the same price as a normal one. And I don't have downtime for service. I don't have unexpected issues, and it's going to just, fuel is not going to be a thing anymore. I don't need a generator on site, because it's going to have a power tax credit, stuff like that. Yeah. Like, I think as a business owner, if you have the ability to power these vehicles at your base of operations, no one's taking more than 100 miles in any direction outside of their normal area of operation, you know, for a large percentage of businesses, at least, because you're not going to pay your employees to drive 2 hours realistically or more to get to a job site and then have them only do less work and then come back. You're going to focus in your area. So these, like, I think 200 miles real world range is going to be plenty for that sort of a work truck.
Yeah. You're delivering all day. Ben, I think, like we see now, I mean, odds are you're going to see way more Platinum and Lariat F-150 Lightnings sold at first, even though I think the XLT will probably be enough for just about everybody. I don't think you need to get, you know, the Lariat or Platinum. Most, like, just like people now don't need to get the Platinum or even King Ranch version of the F-150 to drive to the mall and to your office job and really, but it's definitely more of a luxury truck, so it makes sense. But I also hope that you just see way more of the Pro or XLTs around, because I think those trucks right there are going to be the sweet spot of the lineup, especially price-wise. Mm-hmm. I bet you an XLT will probably touch 60, maybe a little more, because right now they already do, because you can get a pretty well option. But I don't think you really need to spend any more than that on that vehicle, or on most cars in reality.
I'll tell you what, Ben, I'm excited for, and what I hope to see is Pros and XLTs fitted out with like truck bed campers and off-road suspension. And yeah, I want to see the electric overlanding scene full of these things.
Like a Tremor version.
Yeah, because I think Rivian is going to be obviously like massive in that, but with a higher starting price point, the people that want to take their adventures off-road but maybe don't have 70k to get the Rivian that they want,
but you have to be pretty comfortable with the idea of breaking something that is $70,000-$80,000 while doing
exactly
it, and getting it probably dirty, which is a little harder to swallow than say $45,000
and a Ford.
That's a big difference.
Like,
and a Ford, that's another thing.
Ford F-150 is like, when I think of a Ford F-150, I think of like, I will never have problems getting this thing fixed, because mm-hmm. there are, because it's the best-selling truck in America. They're really proud mm-hmm. of that.
And there are dealers everywhere, unlike Rivian, which is growing.
Absolutely everywhere. And it's probably been parts binned with the F-150 for a lot of the mm-hmm. like suspension components,
the interior stuff,
things that would actually break if you were doing something like that. You jumping could go to O'Reilly's. Yeah, if you were going off like 20-foot jumps, you can go to O'Reilly's and get you a replacement, whatever, and they probably have it. I don't know. I think it's very, very exciting. When I first saw how cheap they were going to be, I was like, I'm going to buy one and just take it overlanding. I'm just going to live out of it.
Yeah, that's so actually cool. A really good idea. Like, that would be really neat. And especially if Ford does start offering like an accessory, or like a third party company starts offering accessories for the overlanding off-roading community. Like, as we mentioned, that's Rivian's focus. But right now, if you were to pre-order a Rivian, you're probably not going to get it, that truck, until 2023 or 2024. And they only have about 60,000 pre-orders, I think. Whereas Ford will be able to sell probably 150,000 trucks in that same time of the Lightning. Just for the sheer manufacturing mm-hmm. capabilities.
And the interesting thing is Ford has been talking about how your truck can power your house, right? That's kind of been their whole thing. Yeah,
that's a big selling point.
With overlanding, that's a big thing, is everybody that has an overlanding rig will typically have a solar and a battery setup, and their battery setup has to be capable of powering any accessories that they're going to use. So like, whether that be a stove, whether that be a heater, your air conditioning, if they have an air conditioning unit on their camper. There's mm-hmm. a lot of things that the F-150 has an inherent advantage because it's a big battery. So I don't know. I just find that there's a lot of possibilities there. And I really hope that we see like the aftermarket really take a hold of that. I hope at like SEMA 2022 is just full of like electric
lightnings. Right? That'd be good.
But I can't think of another like competition to that outside of the Rivian. Like, I don't know of any other mm-hmm. electric trucks that would be available so soon.
Hummer EV maybe, but that's $100,000 truck.
Yeah,
and it's a whole other thing.
You're eclipsing Rivian by a lot, and you're also driving.
That's a flex
like,
machine.
It's the size of like an F-350, right? It's like a massive vehicle.
1,000 pounds.
That's kind of scary. Yeah,
I know. First thing I want to take off road.
There are currently 3,005 Ford dealership service centers in the United States. So that actually, I think, is a huge advantage to the F-150 Lightning is you can be in really the middle of nowhere. And whether or not they're like the most skilled with EV stuff, they're going to be able to order a part, have the instructions on how to put it on there. Worst case scenario, if you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
So, you know, that's a pretty strong case to be made for an EV these days when so much of people's concerns is how close is it to get serviced, or because it's new technology. And that, I think that is a huge thing, you know, having such a reputation behind it as far as locations and availability. You know, I'm sure there's probably more than that, a number of locations that might even just be fleet specific that don't come up in that search.
Absolutely. And with Rivian, I mean, Rivian, I believe, plans on having like remote field techs, like doing the whole thing.
Tesla's doing,
where they'll go to your house. And
I thought they were going to rent space inside of like Amazon warehouses or something as well to like help localize shops.
Well, they're going to have like service centers. Like there is one in Denver. It's just obviously not open yet.
They have one in Denver.
1,800 miles away from me. So, you know,
there's plans for drive. Salt Lake and I think one in Dallas actually as well. But it can't really hold a candle to 3,000. And
that's
a lot. Not to mention, too, I think the fact that Ford being who they are with manufacturing, they're going to part spin as much as they can. And I think realistically, if you were on an off-road adventure, what has the possibility to break is probably not drivetrain related. It's more likely something outside of that, like you high center on something and a skid plate or something in your suspension just gives out.
A CV boot or something.
You could bend suspension linkage. All that stuff's going to be easy to come by. That's actually a really strong benefit.
That's going to be a Ford F-150 part. It might be a little bit beefed up because it's electric and it may weigh a little bit more, but even still, a lot of those parts are over-engineered because they're on a truck that may have a load on them. So I don't know.
And they're probably going to be dirt cheap because F-150 is currently the most produced vehicle in the world. You know that like tow arm link on the rear suspension is going to be dirt cheap like when you need one.
$37. Yeah.
It's going to probably be like $3.
Yeah. Rivian, it's like, you know what? That's the part that isn't being sold for service yet.
We don't sell that part separately. It's only sold as an entire left suspension package or something.
Yeah.
You know, reality, if this does turn into like that off-roading overland thing, it really makes me rethink wanting a Rivian now.
It's actually interesting. Yeah.
I think we should maybe start a venture of a aftermarket Ford F-150 overlanding supply.
I was going to say, we might just came up with a new idea for a company, boys.
We should create Lightning Lander. It's the competition to the Cyber Lander camper.
I bet we could
take reservations now. You could just mail me $1,000.
Yeah,
I'll keep track of it.
Whatever you want to pay, $50 to $10,000, we'll take.
Yeah, it's really a pay what you're comfortable with solution.
Yeah.
You know, be in the giving spirit when you mail in the checks.
We may or may not have a good product for you when everything is ready, which
I'm handy with 2x4s and some plywood.
There could be a downside to that because unlike the Cyberlander, the product is probably going to start getting made in 4 months. But
I'll have to deliver.
All right, that's a whole nother can of worms. On the topic of Ford, something that I love talking about, I feel like every time I've been on the podcast, this has come up at least once. And Mike, you actually mentioned that you may be seeing one of these more frequently. The Ford Maverick, Jim Farley, the CEO of Ford, has hinted that that product line may be expanding. So we might be seeing something like the Mustang Mach-E. There's been spottings of the Maverick being tested with what looked to be a raised suspension. So maybe like a Maverick Raptor variant.
I really don't want to see that one.
That would be
I think it ruins the point of what the Maverick is.
I think that would be really hard to pull off. But personally, what I'm more excited about is the hinting at apparently Ford is gauging interest in producing the ST trim of the Ford Maverick, which I think suits it a lot better. And being a Fiesta ST owner myself, I love the idea of it. However, I don't
Subaru
like what
Baja Ford's competitor. This could be cool.
I don't like what Ford's been doing with the ST nameplate, just throwing it on the Explorer and throwing it on the Edge. I feel like that kind of devalued it a little bit because the Focus and the Fiesta were really solid, really good cars. and they just kind of threw it on the semi-hot version of their SUVs and called it a sport trim. But I don't know. I think that's really interesting. If they could just
You not forgive them if they made like a sporty little pickup truck that was like kind of low? I think it's okay.
Yeah, and then it's totally
broken
fine.
The door. Yeah. It's fine.
I think it's cool if they do that because it kind of gives me like that old Toyota Tacoma X-Runner. Vibes. Like, they were just little extended cab, lowered pickup trucks. You can get them with a 6-speed manual. You can even throw the TRD supercharger on it. Yep, they were only rear-wheel drive. Now the
factory supercharger was available.
Yep, factory supercharger on the X-Runner. Like, it was really cool, and Toyota actually did sell quite a few of them. So I think a Maverick ST could potentially turn into something really spicy and interesting. You know, throw in that little 2.3-liter EcoBoost motor and all-wheel drive. I doubt we'll see a manual. That would be cool.
Yeah. I have no idea if that transmission is actually like enjoyable or not, but you know.
Yeah, I've not driven a modern Mustang of any great distance lately. So. But I'm all aboard for expanding the Maverick line, mainly because I believe my stepdad is actually going to order one. The one that he wants, though, is just literally when I asked him, what do you want in a car? Because right now he drives a really, really old Ford Explorer, a 2002 Ford Explorer that my family bought brand new back in 02, but it's definitely on its last leg. It's got a lot of little issues and the paint's fading off, kind of like our Lexus has been. But but he was like, I just want power windows and air conditioning. I'm like, perfect.
Good news. That's all you got. Almost XL every Maverick. Car.
Yeah. Does well, I was like, yeah, you have lots control. Of options.
Cruise control.
No, he said he doesn't care about cruise
really?
Control.
Really? Interesting. I would go
he would never really use it.
Purely for that reason, because I would want to take it on all the road trips. But
does cruise control cost to install in a car?
It can't be that much.
Like, can it just be a standard aftermarket?
I thought it was. I was surprised it didn't have it.
That's crazy.
It comes with LED headlights and Apple CarPlay is standard.
Right? I think that's one of those things that – well, I can see the LED headlights and the CarPlay because, like, it makes it so much easier to not have to have – different units, kind of like what we were talking about with the whole Tesla thing.
Yeah, manufacturing wise.
Way easier to streamline it that way. But cruise control, I don't know. I feel like that is also one of those things that would make it quite difficult to have a variation of that without it. But I also think that's one
you
of those
just
features.
Put the module in it, probably. Yeah. Actually, you know what? This is brilliant because someone who's shopping for a new car, the things they're going to check for, Apple CarPlay, like these sort of like techie features. Oh, I want my new car to have these. They're not going to think, is my new car still going to have cruise control? No one's going to think that. The car will be sold long before someone realizes the mistake.
I think.
Ford will have made an extra $46.
That could be part of it, though, of them trying to bump people up to the next trim level. Because they advertise this XL. It's, what is it, 19,995 or whatever. So they're under
20. Yeah, before destination.
Yeah, before destination, which is
on every trim. That shouldn't be allowed.
This thing ever.
Yeah, that's
silly. If I have to pay it, just put it in the price.
Just put it in there.
But you get steel wheels.
Steel wheels are cool. But I think it's one of those things where they're trying to bump you up to the next trim level. Like, they can still say that they offer it. And there probably will be a lot of people like your stepdad, Mike, who will use it and not need it. But for somebody who is looking for cruise control, they have to bump up to the XLT.
Oh, yeah.
To get it.
I remember.
And there are a lot of people who don't. I know a lot of people who are like, oh, I never use cruise control. So, I mean, if it's a work truck, who cares? Your employees drive it, not you.
Yeah, exactly. So I think the work truck, they killed it. Because that's a lot of those XLs are probably going to be bought for fleet use.
I actually saw a Maverick XL when I was in Connecticut over Thanksgiving break. Blue with the steel wheels, and it looked really freaking good.
That's
it was
awesome.
The first one I've actually seen in person driving down the road.
Was it that kind of like lighter? It wasn't the dark blue. I don't know.
It was the lighter blue.
Okay. I think that's the only one I've seen as well. Yeah, they look so cool. I want to see that light green color that they have, that minty almost color. Mm-hmm. Lunar
I
rock.
I like their color palette, to be honest. I like the orange too. I would do that.
Especially if it was an ST. Yeah, I'd go for the orange.
Well, yeah, see, there you go. ST only needs to be offered in blue, black, orange.
Tangerine Scream.
Yeah, and white. the color palette they had for the Fiesta ST is funny because I'm in all the Facebook groups and the nerd groups. You have Green Envy was that obnoxious light green color you see.
Super bright.
Orange Spice was a fun one. the seats that I have in mind are molten orange is what people call them. There's also a molten orange color. They have all a bunch of cool names and a bunch of unique colors.
Oxford white.
Yeah, there's Oxford like, white, and there
always
was
always
like,
what their white is called.
Platinum white was the white they replaced it with in 2017, I think. It's just like, yeah, I don't know, very interesting. And they do have a really nice color palette, and I don't know. I'm very curious to see because I think there could be a lot of things they alter for future model years for the Maverick. Mm-hmm. I think for this first year, it's going to be fairly limited. But I would love to see like alternative, like maybe an all-wheel drive hybrid option, because right now you can only
get that'd be nice. All-wheel
drive. I don't know, like in different trim levels, like the ST.
I suspect we'll see a lower one, a taller one, and what else is after that? Really, do we think? All-wheel drive hybrid, maybe?
I would love to see all-wheel drive hybrid.
Do you think they'll make it into an SUV off the same platform? But that's kind of Bronco Sport.
It's a Bronco Sport that's slightly elongated, so I don't know if they'll do SUV on that.
Two-door.
That would be cool.
Give me a little two-door one. Why not? I don't know. No, they'll never do that. Well, no, they can make a two-door so they get a like 6.5-foot bed or whatever the size people seek is, because I know it's a short bed. Get rid of the back seats and have a big bed.
4.5-foot, I think, is what it is.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. What's the Rivian? Is it just like 5 feet? It's not even 5.5. I think it's a little short.
I think a lot of the full size trucks with the crew cab is like 5.25 or 5.5 usually.
Yeah.
5.5 and 6.5 for the size of
6-foot bed. On a crew cab, or you can do the 8-foot bed, which looks ridiculous on a crew cab.
If you ever get an 8-foot bed on a crew cab truck, like you stick a solid like 5 feet out of a normal parking spot.
Oh, yeah.
It looks insane. I don't know how anyone drives. What
was that Toyota Tundra we saw a while ago? That was like the big cab with the like 8-foot bed. It was
huge. It was a Toyota. So it was the first time I've actually seen this that I can remember.
It was wild. They came around the corner and it just kept coming around the corner.
Yeah, but it was the quad cab or the Toyota Tundra extended cab, which still has four doors, but one of them's like a little half door with the little like clamshell style handle. But it had an 8-foot bed on it. And I've never seen an 8-foot bed
on like any
Tundra that wasn't a regular cab.
Yeah. It was just the strangest proportions of a vehicle I've ever seen.
I was like, it had to have been custom ordered. Some old man went in there and went, I need an 8-foot bed, but I need to haul my grandkids around too. And
for the man who needs to carry large items and small people.
I've seen quite a few of those, but I think Texas has a much larger truck segment.
I remember
a few weeks ago, I think it was my wife, somebody said, hey, I saw this 6-door truck. And I was like, what? Or maybe it was Suburban. And somebody had modified it. And sure enough, it was doors. And I think it had a small bed on it. And I was just like, that is the most ridiculous thing I've seen in my entire
life. It's like, it's kind of like, I bet you've seen these down in
they call it the Texas minivan.
Austin, yeah.
Where you could get like a Ram 3500 mega cab dually. But the dually bed is like 5.5 feet. So it's a really stumpy looking truck. And I've seen them, like, I know that they exist. I just saw one recently. It's super rare to see, especially when you put like a fifth wheel attachment in it. Like, I don't really understand the mega cab dually thing. But this is, we've moved on. Like, that is way bigger than a Maverick. So
wait, while we're on this tangent, I want to bring up, this is just a shout out to Duraburb Incorporated, which is a company in Florida that will take a Suburban, put a Duramax in it, the diesel engine General Motors makes, and then they'll take the frame underneath, which is based off a 1500 truck chassis, and they'll put a heavy-duty 3500 series chassis in it with like the big axles and transmission differentials. Instead of like a 5-lug wheel, you get like a, I don't know, 8 or some ridiculous number of bolts holding the wheel on. And
8-lug,
yeah. They make a variant which has 1,050 horsepower and does a quarter mile in 11 seconds, which, by the way, is what a Hellcat does in the quarter mile. Just wanted to share that. That was cool. $145,000. Pretty good value, actually.
The diesel trucks are very fast. Like a Cummins that's been tuned and whatever had the EGR, whatever the deletes are that you do to get all the smog stuff out of the way. They're quite quick, which is just frustrating on Texas roads because I'm in my little Fiesta on a highway going 15 over on the highway because everybody does. And then I get my doors blown off by a guy in a 2500 who just really needs to get to, I don't know where people barbecue.
Whataburger.
Oh, by the way, Durburb still gets 26 miles per gallon. That's the crazy. That's incredible. So it weighs like 7.5
I've only ever seen, I saw a Durburban once driving to Nashville when I used to live in Tennessee. It was just driving like I did weekly, pretty much. Just driving up. All of a sudden I looked over. I'm like, huh, that Suburban looks funny. Like it was, it had the different wheels.
A little taller up. Yeah,
it's got like a truck wheel. And then it had a big exhaust. I'm like, that's weird. So I drove up on it, and sure enough, on the side, it said Duramax right on the door. Yeah. It was definitely a Duraburban conversion because it looked completely factory.
That's the best company ever, Duraburb. So you know exactly what they're doing right from the beginning.
Yeah.
I bet you a Maverick, going back to the truck that started this whole tangent conversation, a 2-liter EcoBoost Maverick tuned could be kind of spicy. Mm-hmm. I bet you there are some.
Is that the same engine
looking at it.
As the Mustang 4-cylinder?
No, it's like 310 horsepower? No, it's 2.3 in the Mustang.
Focus RS had slightly different variants of a 2.3-liter.
Hence the head gasket issue.
They don't like to talk about that. But I think I can't remember. I think the Focus ST had that 2-liter in it, or something very similar.
I think it's very similar to the Ford. Mm-hmm. Like you would see it in like the Fusion a lot.
The Fusion had it. I think some of the Escape. But yeah, I mean, Ford had a reputation there, especially with the Fiesta, of overbuilding their turbo engines to where they can take a whole lot more stress from the factory and they don't need a whole lot of help. So I hope that that's the case, and I hope that the automatic transmission in it is good.
Still not driven one, so
I've heard good things. A lot of the reviews that I've seen on it have been really great. And most of the reviews that I've seen have been on the 2-liter all-wheel drive variant, because a lot of the YouTube channels that I've been getting them have been getting them specifically for off-road testing. So, of course, they're not going to get anything but the all-wheel drive. I don't know. I'm excited to see kind of where that aftermarket goes, especially after seeing that one at SEMA. And a lot of the people in my Focus and Fiesta groups that I'm in have expressed interest in getting them and modifying them and turning up the boost on that 2-liter and seeing what it can do. So I don't know. Yeah. I think it could be really cool. I think it's cool to see the mini truck scene kind of making a comeback.
And just what I also think is cool about the Maverick in general is just the age demographic that is going to buy this truck. So you're going to have younger people in their 20s just buying their first new car because one, the entry level
is for DIYers,
really good. Their first truck. Yeah. I mean, first time homeowners or couples or anyone, single people live in the city. It's easy to park on the street. You don't have to park this.
It's not much bigger than an SUV. Yeah.
And then you're going to have no retirees who are going to buy it for the same reasons.
People want a truck, but don't want to deal with like truck gas mileage and the size of a truck and the cost of the parts on a truck. And on the quick note on the DIYer thing, have you guys seen that they have little spots all over the interior of the car that have a slot for a 3D printed accessory? So you can 3D print your own accessories. So it can be like cup holders. It can be like grocery bag holders. It can be anything you want it to be. And they're kind of in the front and in the back, kind of strategically placed. And they give you whatever the file is for the 3D printing like receiver. And then you put whatever you want on the outside of it.
I like this idea.
You have a reason to use your 3D printer now. So
I'm just it's been used Ben like five times over 5 years.
That he has used. Maybe twice since I've known him, maybe three times. So look, now
he's paying for itself slowly like but surely.
Slots and things like that for your So reach out to Ben. He has a 3D printer.
It might take a little while.
Yeah. If you're listening to the podcast and you have a Maverick, hit up Ben.
Actually, yeah, I would. I'll do one. I'll do a couple.
They do have the same thing in the bed, where they have different slots.
Yeah, that's really
like 2x4s and like so you can make a flat tray above the wheel arches in the bed. So a lot of really cool stuff, like specifically, and they on the higher level trims, they have an outlet back there, and they have electrical running to the bed where you can put your own electrical accessories. They have so much cool stuff that's like built in for DIYers that I think is really cool.
That's a good idea too, because I'm going to throw Toyota under the bus. When they launched the current generation Supra, they had all these like fake vents on it, and they're like, oh, when people modify these, they're going to take the vents out and like actually run those for cooling. But like half the vents were just body panels on top of other body panels. So if you took it out, it just leads to a metal fender beneath the plastic fender. So there was like nothing of truth.
Yeah,
there's like nothing of truth behind any of that at all. And even if they were realistically going somewhere, some of the places they went would be the worst possible place to like inject air. Like your rear wheel well doesn't really help in there. But then here's Ford with these like little 3D printed receptacles, and they give you the info that you need to like make your own thing that attaches to it. So you don't have to like map out and do all this tedious measuring to figure out what the slot is. That's awesome. Good job, Ford. I'm gonna buy a F-150 Lightning now. I've decided. I like Ford all of a sudden. I guess.
Well, you can't reserve it anymore. You have to just.
Well, I have to wait a year.
I gotta wait to just buy one. Yeah, I think they could turn up production on those pretty quick.
Oh, I think they will. Yeah. But I mean, we filled an hour, guys. Just three of us filled it in. It's amazing. It was a fun,
this week's
fun
topic, off topic.
Yeah, this week's topic. Enjoy. Whatever we feel like. I hope you enjoyed the tangents. I think we will call it there. If everyone wants to give themselves a shout out, we have Mike at Mike_Breeling.
Yes, I'm on Twitter.
Ben at Benji at _OOS, also on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. And you can come yell at me for not buying in the Tesla for my next electric vehicle like everyone else if you'd like.
Yell at Ben for that, and also yell at Ben for not getting a Rivian because he's changed his mind to a F-150. And then you can find me on Instagram at Flywheel Films. Guys, I think we'll call it there.